This is an interview with Jennifer Rohrer Walsh on Monday, July 30th, 2001.
I came when my son was two, so that's 15 years ago. Yeah.
And what was your position then?
Well, I first was here part-time, taught English classes, basic core English classes, and did that for a long time, you know, came and taught at night. So I'd come over during the day when he was taking a nap and teach a couple classes and go home and then come back at night, and kind of crazy. And then eventually worked up to full-time and then tenure track and branched out in different types of classes and now the honors program.
So,
well, I think we're in our fifth year, but Dr. Walsh began it, so you're going to talk to him about that. We started with, I think, about 8 to 10 students in the freshman class. Now we have four sections. We have 47 students in the freshman class, so we have about 70 people in the program. Honestly, they don't all stay in the program. It's a very self-selecting program. They decide if they want to spend this much time reading the great books, because it's a reading program. It's great books of the Western tradition, starting with the ancient Greeks, moving to the contemporary world. And they decide if they can juggle this with their major, because this is for any major. So we have, in fact, a lot of pre-med, pre-PA students. And most of them are involved in a sport, or they're really involved in student life, or they're very much involved in a church, or they work. Every one of them has something very major in their life, and we know that's not going to be the honors program. So we expect to you know, have them select out of the program and eventually end up with a class of about 8 to 10 when they're juniors. Right, it's a big commitment, and we can't really predict how well they can handle it. We are finding that SAT scores are not a great predictor. We have some wonderful students who have even less than 1,000 SATs. And they've done very well in the program. They've done very well at Methodist. They go to graduate school. So we think it's mainly the ball in their court. We give them this invitation. And they see if they like it and if they want to continue doing it.
Besides reading the great books, what do they do?
Well, it's a seminar class, so even from the beginning when they're freshmen, they're in a very small discussion class. They do philosophy, religion, history, literature, science, so that, you know, the great books go all across those disciplines. They, in their IDS class, they have an etiquette component. It's because we really stress that that will help them in life, and that just is a well-rounded person that goes well with the school motto. They do volunteer work, which isn't really volunteer work because it's required. They do community service and
forced labor.
They do that. They have to attend a certain number of cultural events every semester. They simply have to talk about them. They don't have to write any big. They first semester they do a fun presentation. They are the comic relief among the sophomore and junior presentations. And then second semester, they start to build their presentation skills and they coordinate a couple of things that they read. And then they eventually do the senior project, which is when they coordinate their major with the great books.
So this
is a five-semester reading program and then a one-semester project if they decide to do the project. But the project is a big one-on-one commitment with the other co-director. So a lot of them don't really have that interest in doing the project. And then we take them places. They go to D.C. every year. They're thinking about going to South Carolina and going to this garden that has all these Greek statues. So they formed a club, the Lecter Club, and they're planning to probably combine with the English club, which is called Novelties, and go to plays together. So and then they go on a trip once a year to Europe. Well, this will be our second year coming up, so.
Do they all get to go, or
well, you're right, they have to pay for it. It's actually open to anybody in the college, but they're the best candidates because we're picking sites about which they've read, and there are lectures at every site. So unless they really have read, you know, ancient Greece, you know, ancient Rome, they're not going to be that interested in hearing these lectures. So, those are the people we heavily recruit to go on the trip.
And you invite them to your house.
And they come to our house a lot, yes. And we realize the etiquette class maybe didn't work as take as well as we thought. They come to the house. What else do we do with them? I don't know. We keep in touch with them, you know.
And so what benefits have those been increased? And so what have some of them done after graduation?
Well, we have one in graduate school in accounting, and we hear from her quite often. We have another student who just graduated who got married, and she's going to graduate school with her new husband. And so she's doing really well. And then we have a couple going into the PA program. So.
That reading practice is going to be handy for the PA program.
Right. They do so much reading. And it makes them more well-rounded. We've really enjoyed having a very eclectic group. There aren't many BAs at the college. And so we don't have many BAs in the program. So it's not like we're marrying with history majors or English majors. By far, we have typical college majors, PGM, PTM, pre-med, PA. So the big majors of the college are the big represented, you know, it's the same proportion in the class. So it isn't as if we have a bunch of English majors in the class at all, which I think we expected, mm-hmm. but we didn't get, and we're much richer for it. But you have talked to Dr. Walsh, too. I don't want to get in trouble.
Some people add some things and some add others.
Right.
You've done some other projects with committees here in Spanish.
Yeah, I've chaired academic standards for a couple of years, and our big push with that has been the honor code and the honor board. We're tracking alleged violations and trying to open the honor board up more to different members of the faculty, trying to show administrative support for concern for the honor code.
Do students still sign something, still sign honor code? There used to be a big book.
Right. We were going to reinitiate that, and it's very cumbersome with transfer students and with evening college students. On one of the pieces of paper that they sign every time they register, there is a little statement about the honor code, but we felt that that got lost in all the registrations. So now we're doing just a separate sheet of paper with the honor code at the top, a brief statement about it, and their signature saying that they've read that statement. They will refer to the student handbook, which they received. We'll keep a copy for in their folder, and they will take a copy. So every time they register now, they'll sign that. The rooms now are going to have signs that will sit behind wherever the professor is, and we'll have that same one statement, concern about the honor code. So that whether or not the student perceives the teacher is invested in this, you know, the college is invested in it, and that will show through. We're also going to talk with repeated violators of the honor code, just to see, you know, why that would be going on. So we're tracking them, and then we'll bring them in just to really talk to them, not really issue any more penalty than the instructor already has, but just to say, you know, this is a great concern to the college. So we've made some headway with that. We've coordinated with student life every step of the way because the students are as upset or more upset than the professors are. They are far less sympathetic than the professors are about this kind of thing. Our strong older students don't like a climate that, you know, weakens an honor code. And we need to respect them. They're the pride and joy of the college. So. Well, it used to be members of the honor of the academic standards, and then we just decided that was too limited, because what if there are a couple conflicts in there, the professors already know the students, then we're stuck with only those people left. And being a member of academic standards, even though you may be a wonderful participant in that committee, you might not have the same skills to be on an honor board. So this year we're going to be able to open it up to the faculty and see who's really interested in doing that. Faculty collegiality and development is still thriving. We have a new faculty dinner every beginning of the school year where the returning faculty host a dinner at somebody's house. It's always been at our house, but it doesn't need to always be at our house. They bring anything to drink and eat, and then the new faculty are the guests, and they come, and it's usually very well attended. We have speakers every month, sometimes a couple times a month, called Collegiality Presents, and that's simply faculty members who want to talk about something. They either want to give a formal lecture, they want to ask people's opinions, they want to give us a show, a slideshow of their trip. They can do whatever they want, and usually 10 to 20 people just come and sit around on couches and listen to them. It's really very informal. Sometimes we have heated debates, and sometimes we just have a casual, you know, conversation. We have the B.F. Stone Endowed Lyceum as part of faculty collegiality and development, and the Student Lyceum, which is not endowed, is part of that. And then we sponsor the faculty book signing at the end of the year. I think that's pretty much what it's been reduced to. We used to be a lot more political when we first started, and we've really gotten away from that. The premise is very simple. If you're going to be a better college, then the faculty has to take its share of responsibility in being a better college, and so that's what we would like to share responsibility. So it's not really just me. I mean, everybody organizes this. Everybody's interested and everybody participates in it, and it's pretty much the same group depending on their schedules. Just academic standards. I'm very involved in academic standards. And now I'm recruiting for the honors program. I'm the co-director, so I've done all the recruiting for this year with Rick Lowe, and that's been a real eye-opener. Everyone should have to recruit. Everyone should have to recruit because you really understand the level of investment that goes in, and, you know, admissions. And so then when you're a professor who's complaining about, you know, the poor quality of students, you realize that it's one student at a time that gets the institution better. And really, I mean, you're doing all this research. The institution wasn't originally designed, targeted toward, you know, continually raising the average SAT. You know, that wasn't the target audience for the institution. So you have a lot of, you know, conflicting voices. But we've really worked a lot with admissions. They really help us. They give us all the names, and we work for them. And then we have students recruiting. They are the best recruiters. They get on the phone, and I leave the room, and they seem to really, we can really sell it. They'll be very honest about it, how much time, how much they're involved in other things. Basically, if you just read the books, come to class, you're in good shape, you know. So, I've really enjoyed recruiting, and I enjoy doing the trip. We're doing another trip abroad, London, Paris, and Rome. So, yeah, it's very high speed, and it's a lot of lectures. So it's you have to kind of prepare people for that. So if you just want to go and shop, you're on the wrong trip. That's it. So I've kind of moved away from English, and English is a second language. Now that's English as a foreign language, and the education department, and just in honors. I feel lucky to be doing that, because that's all I can do is read great books and go and talk about them to intelligent people, and can't complain about that.
Do you see the students coming to you as better prepared, the average student, not the foreign college, but better prepared or not as well prepared than?
In English? Oh, not as well prepared. Right. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Now, we don't deal too much with their writing, so we don't even see that, because the presentations are just oral. But just from their emails, of course, email etiquette is, I guess, a little different. But yeah, I don't think they're nearly as well prepared in terms of their writing. No, in fact, most of them said to me that they thought they were pretty well read until they saw the list. And then they were astounded at how little of them that they'd read. But, I mean, we still have those great anthologies in American Lit and British Lit and World Lit, which gives them a taste of it. But they've hardly read anything in its entirety. So, but it's interesting that they want to do that.
Encouraging that they want to.
Right, right. They don't seem too daunted when they look at the list. No, I really do believe that the faculty has to take its share of responsibility in the school. And, Eric Bitterbaum said that years ago, and I know it wasn't a real popular thing to say at a faculty meeting, you know, if you want a better school. But I think we do need to take a great deal of attention to that. And we have a lot of younger faculty who have families, and it's just not their time. But then you have kind of the senior partners in the firm, and, you know, that's what I think we need to somehow support them in investing in the school.
You're right, there is a sense of ownership.
Yeah, and then because they, you know, that's their time in life to be giving back to the school.
And I have to the group chair, and I have to go to the gym sometimes, or the group. And those coaches would be over there, not just to my job, but they would come and sit in different time zones.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of the time, it just amazed me, the teaching, the coaching, and the recruitment that they have to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the more people, I mean, they do that probably pretty much on their own, and we're so lucky because we get the Presidential Scholars List from admissions, so we're not really starting at scratch at all. And then we get faculty recommendations, which really help us, and then we get the students. So, you know, I feel really that I'm not doing nearly the recruiting job that some people in this college really have to do, and yet I'm just astounded by how excited you are when you get that next student, you know. And, you know, to try to get away from looking only at the credentials, listening to the student is a big part of it, too.
You've already built a bond, a bridge.
Right.
With that student.
Mm-hmm. And with the parents, and it really helps that I'm, you know, pretty much their age or a little bit older. I mean, but I have two kids in college, one at science and math, you know, so I know what that's like. Have kids going away and spending money on them and all that kind of stuff. So.